Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. It's show 49 of the Retro Computing Roundtable, and it's a special bonus show from the VCF Southeast. Let's hear it, everybody in the crowd.
Ooh, yay!
Ooh.
There's one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? Will I ever find my way back to Oz?
It's Saturday, April 20th, and like always, we're streaming live over at youtube.com/RCRpodcast. The RCR is hosted by CyberEars. You can have them host your podcasts and audio files, too. Go to cyberears.com for more details. I'm your host this time, David, because of the special event, and I'm here. And I'm on special assignment here at the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast in sunny Roswell, Georgia. And with me, as always, please welcome Carrington Vanston. I'm getting to the screen so everybody can see it. Welcome, Carrington Vanston.
Hello.
Who is in Toronto, Canada. Mm-hmm. And then Earl Evans in Portland, Oregon. And
Hello.
Then with me in our screen, we have a special guest from Portland, Oregon, Kevin Savitz. He'll be speaking tomorrow at the show.
Yay!
So thanks, guys. Thanks for making this special time.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
So on with the show. We're going to do a kind of slower, shorter show.
Easy for you to
say.
So
let's start off. I guess the first topic is the show here. I made the host topic, which isn't really the nature of the host topic, but got to talk about the VCF SE. So, guys, you know what? Overall, I think it's a good success. We've done really well. We're trying to guess how many numbers, but I'm thinking at least 300 people. Would you say?
Nice. Yeah.
Did a good crowd.
A good flow of crowd all day long. It's 6 o'clock here, a little after, so we have another hour and a half. Tomorrow we'll be here 9:30 to 5:30, and I actually predict, I think because today's been pretty successful, we'll actually get, usually you think a Sunday crowd might be smaller. I kind of think it might be bigger. It's just, I think a lot of word of mouth is going to get out, and hopefully there'll be more. Be more people. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, Kevin? What else do we have to say about
it? I've been having a great time. I thought it was a good crowd in the morning initially, and then I thought maybe around lunchtime it was slowing down, and I might have snuck away to take a little nap. And then when I came back, it was like a whole new batch of people I hadn't seen in the morning. And so I'm having fun out there playing video games and looking at old systems and talking to just an amazing variety of people. It's been a good day.
Good. Yeah. You guys could hear everything, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I got an error message.
Great.
So if you guys saw the error message, but apparently it was still working. You got any questions? I don't know. What else do you want to say?
I think 300 people for a 1.0 on any of the vintage computer festivals is an amazing crowd.
Absolutely.
Well, and clearly the Apple pop-up museum is the star of the show. And I mean, that's fair. And I'm really pleased. And I think we did a great job on our side of things. And this is all awesome too, but I mean the pop-up museum, wait till you see some pictures from it. It's a real museum, and it's very much a very quality, semi-permanent museum. It's amazing. You're going to hear James is in the audience. You hear him talking about it, I guess, on the Retro Matcast. It's very impressive. So huge positive feedback on that. But then
it's the highest quality semi-permanent Apple museum I have ever seen.
Top five. Yeah, I saw the pictures that you posted on Twitter, and I was blown away. I can't believe, from the photos I've seen so far, it's unbelievable how good that looks. It's crazy.
How can people find those photos?
Twitter. Twitter is this new thing, Earl. All the kids are into it.
I've heard of it. That old 140-character thing. But what specifically?
VCFSE has its own Twitter feed, which is at VCFSE. You'd never guess that. And if you go there, David has posted a couple of photos, and they're totally bitchin'. Am I allowed to say bitchin'? I'm going to say it again. Bitchin'!
Oh.
Stop.
I forgot what I was going to say. twitter.com/VCFSE. And I'm going to tweet some more pictures out immediately after this. So I try to take, and we've got a bunch of other pictures to tweet out. And also you can find the Apple pop-up museum on the Facebook page, so just do a search and find that. There'll be some, there's plenty of places to find other information, so, and pictures, I mean, and I'm doing video. Unfortunately, just didn't make the live streaming thing happen, but at least we're able to do this part live streaming, so. Anyways, all right. So we'll talk about it some more. And
so is that true that you guys had a Doom LAN party there? I was reading about that.
Is that great?
That's pretty cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, a local gentleman set up an exhibit, and he's got four 486s with Doom running on them IPX with not 10BASE-T, but the coaxial, like, is it 10BASE-2? Like, whatever
old school the
networking.
Coax. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and it's been a big
hit. That's awesome.
The soldering area has been a big hit. I mean, everything's been a pretty big hit.
What are people building in the soldering area?
Heck off, man.
What's this thing about the Doom thing?
Hello? Can you guys hear me?
The guy who's running the Doom thing, I saw him showing a kid. A kid's like, want to play Doom. So he's like, I'm showing you how to set up a LAN party, you know, back in the day. So he has the three or four machines, and he's showing him the networking and the configuration and the screens of making the IPX work and this and that. And the kid is just like, I just want to play the game. And finally, he's like, okay, now you can start shooting. He's like, yeah.
We have the classic game system, and that's, I think, been a big hit. And kids are playing it, and adults too. We're very happy.
Awesome.
So, and someone's asking a question. Sorry. He's saying that our soldering station—they're doing a little. I need to take a close-up picture of one of the projects. I tweeted one picture of some people building it, but it's a four-light little microprocessor
control, 5-LED array.
What he said. Oh, and you get to burn and finalize the processor, and you get to keep it. It's free. We were able to do this, something we were able to do free. Very popular, and it's great. You look at the people, the adults and children's faces, and they're just all really into it and having a good time. So, all right, let's not wear this out, I guess. So we'll move on now, unless there's any other questions, guys. But it's a whole other day tomorrow, so we can report on that, I guess, next show. So now we're gonna do like what we do in our regular show. I was a guest on the Retro Computing Retro Matcast with James and John, and we also discussed Steve, the movie. So Kieran, let's us discuss it.
Sure, let's discuss it. I had some doubts that it was a real film until it got released. I was on the fence thinking, is this actually something that's coming out or not? And turns out it was. It's now been released. I have attempted to watch it, but find I can't get through the stupid thing. There's some bits that are really funny and some bits that I find achingly slow. Overall, I think it's a movie that you get more out of if you know the real stories that they're dramatizing, because they're playing fast and loose with the truth, but intentionally so. It's not a movie that's trying to be true. It's a movie that's trying to sort of riff on truth. So I think it's something you're only going to get something out of if you approach it already kind of knowing basically the history of Apple and the history of Steve Jobs, in which case it's got some funny bits. Overall, though, I don't know.
No? No, really? So
yeah, it just didn't do it for me for some reason. I would rate it a medium.
5 stars, or how would you rate it?
I don't know. 3.107.
Okay.
Ish.
The good outweighs the bad, though, so it's more positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's probably worth watching. It's just I found I couldn't get through it in one sitting. Like, I started just hopping around and watching bits and pieces. What about you, Earl? Have you checked it out?
Same thing happened to me. As I was watching it, I saw what some of the people commenting on it were talking about.
Let me interrupt. I'm sorry, Earl, because it's not switching to your video. Do we know why? It's not switching to you?
I don't know why. They switch back over here.
It's switching to him for me. David,
I'm sorry, maybe it's my fault.
Okay.
Let's try this. Go ahead, Earl. Sorry.
All right. No worries. I was just agreeing with Carrington. And
good
also
move,
with
Earl.
Some of the, yeah, I know. And with some of the other online commentators that were saying they couldn't quite tell as they were watching it, is this supposed to be a parody? Is this supposed to be real? It's sort of straddling the line, and I think in doing so, succeeds in neither. So, I don't know, I was finding it kind of hard to watch myself.
Some bits I found really, really funny. The way that people would ignore Steve Woz, that was hilarious. That guy would hold out his hand and nobody would shake it. That kind of stuff was really funny. So some bits I found really, really funny. Other bits I found less so, a little too droll for me, maybe, I don't know.
And as David was pointing out, having Commodore be the bad guy was kind of hilarious.
Mm-hmm. I liked it, I have to say. Oh, spoilers, sorry. And also the whole...
always a good call.
I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. I didn't want to spoil it when we were talking, pointing to James here, audience, but I thought it was hilarious where John Scully...
you know, it's a mole for Commodore, yes. Very funny.
Somebody fires on the very next day. So, I mean, so my take on it is, and I actually ended up watching it in two sittings because I started watching it, getting a bunch of stuff done for this, and then starting watching it, then I had to go to bed, and then finally watching it again. So maybe that helped my impression of it, but I overall liked it. The part with Steve Jobs, and then Melinda Gates, you know, I thought overall it was in pretty good taste as a parody. I kind of thought that part pushed the limits a little bit. I mean, it was sort of funny, and you can't argue with funny, but...
I can argue with funny.
I think it's kind of funny with the, like he's maybe he's got something for us, but that was going a little too far.
Wait, David, I saw Kevin's lips move that time.
Hey, do you want to say something?
When he's operating you.
All right, are we done with I, Steve? Well, that's the show, everyone. No. Okay, so Earl, take it away about the PDP-11 software engineering job. Wow.
All right, yeah. So people were talking about this on the Vintage Computer forums that there's apparently a software engineering job available up in Canada, up your way, Carrington.
Yeah, not too far removed from Toronto.
Indeed. And this is for a senior PDP-11 software engineer. Can you believe it? In this day and age. And in fact, for a team leader of other people who also do PDP-11.
Of course, if you've only been doing it for like 30 years, you're still a junior in that.
I think so. The interesting thing about this, I'd heard rumors of PDP-11 still being used in government and industrial capacities, but you never hear exactly where. It's kind of a mystery. So
I'm pretty sure I know where this is.
Yeah, here's one actual use of the PDP-11 running nuclear plant operations.
Yep.
And some of the people commenting about it saying that once you get a computing system certified for doing work in a nuclear plant, it is painful, if not impossible, to get a replacement computer system certified for the same purpose. Just so many regulations and testing and that kind of thing. So you just stick with what you've got, which in this case is a PDP-11. Now, who knows whether this is a real PDP-11 or one of the hardware-emulated systems, the hardware drop-in replacements that companies have made, or if it's a software emulator, although I kind of doubt that because in this situation, it seems like both the hardware and the software would need to be painstakingly certified for this important of a task. But if you're a PDP-11 assembly language programmer with more than 5 years of experience, and if you've led a team, this is the job for you. And there are probably, I don't know, two or three people in the world that would meet those qualifications.
Well, strangely, the job description says you'll be overseeing other PDP-11 developers and designers. So they already have a group there, and I guess decided not to promote from within. I don't know, maybe they're looking for somebody you can pick up superpowers by exposure or something. Bonkers that this job listing came out, though. It really surprised me.
And a lot of people on the group were saying, wow, I would consider relocating or, you know, actually donating some of my toes to get this job. So I don't know if I'd go that far, but it sounds like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And just a really interesting anachronism in 2013.
It's a great opportunity. So, Kevin, you want your co-host? Go ahead.
What am I doing?
It looks like this guy's next with that.
Carrington. Carrington, I would like you to talk, please, about Project Unity.
No, you can't make me.
Okay. Then that's the show. Thank you very much.
You said Carrington and Unity in the same sentence.
So I looked at this thing for, you know, had a split second of my time of my attention.
So I want to know what you thought.
I know it's a box that plays 18 different video game systems, and I need to know, I didn't understand in the microsecond I gave it, if this was like a product someone's trying to make or just a one-shot deal where someone just shoved a whole bunch of hardware into one giant round.
It's kind of both. It was a hobby by the one fellow who put the guts of 15 different retro consoles mashed them together into one big Franken console called Project Unity, and it's he wanted to run old games on actual hardware, but wanted one system that could run everything. And then in addition to showing you what he's got and what he's made for himself, he has all the plans so that you can make your own. So if you're looking to make your own 15-system Frankenbox, then you can head
it's
on
like
over
step
to...
step one, go on eBay and buy 15 different systems.
Basically, step two, get a lot of tape. It's kind of ugly looking, to be honest, but it's also kind of cool that it's just one big box that you can basically plug in any sort of cartridge and it'll figure out what to do with it.
Oh, well, the link is for the... for a video. I was trying to see if we just find a picture.
Yeah, the actual website is madebybacteria.com, made-by-bacteria.com.
I have like the real lag. At least our show's staying together.
This dead air was brought to you by...
one of those things that it's like awesome that one guy did it, but it's, I don't know, it's like, it's not news to me. It's some guy did a silly project, and the thing will probably burn his house down next week. And
that will make news.
That will make news.
So I'm just bringing up some images. So that, see the box? That's what it looks
like. It looks like a cardboard box with slots for cartridges cut into it.
It's beautiful.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
So Earl, why don't you take it away with a TRS 8-bit March 2013 issue?
Yep. So in the retro computing space, in terms of magazines, I don't know of many left that are printed. In fact, the only one that I know off the top of my head is Juice GS. Do you guys know of any for other platforms that are actual printed magazines that come out at this point? I think Juice GS might be the last one standing.
Isn't there a Sinclair one? Am I wrong about that?
Sorry about my cat meowing. Stormy, could you please knock it off? Sorry.
I just went over to that.
You can never control what your cats are going to do.
See the banner?
What?
I'm sorry. I was just telling the audience the banner, because I go to the link and the banner ad for the VCF SE is there with the little kitten.
Oh, it's true. Cat and a keyboard, isn't it? That's funny. This is our mascot. So
probably non sequitur, but you know, I love it.
So the other magazines that come out tend to come out in PDF or online, and TRS 8-bit is one that apparently has been out for a while because they're into Volume 7, and I hadn't heard about them before, but I caught news about this again on the Vintage Computer Forums and read through some of it and found it quite interesting. They had new content interspersed with some old ads for TRS-80 kind of stuff, and I was enjoying reading it, so I thought I'd just spread the word. And also in the Commodore space, a similar sort of thing is Commodore Free, which comes out on a regular basis and has lots of folks writing interesting stuff for it.
And you saw that it's from Melbourne, Australia, I guess
yes.
The guy that makes it.
It started up in 2007, so it's been going for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
Are either of you guys watching the comments on YouTube?
I have not been.
For the job application, Grumpier Than Thou said that nuclear experience would be a plus. I think he's right in that.
Yeah, it's definitely a job for Homer Simpson, I think.
Homer is not a programmer.
Go.
Let's see. What's next? Oh, look, an empty from me. I wonder why. All right, so Earl, back to you. A complete history of mainframe computing. I don't know if we have enough time for that.
Back to me already? Well, and
yeah,
I think that
the
title has some chutzpah, doesn't it? It's not just a history of mainframe computing, but it's a complete history of mainframe computing. I bet people are going to poke a few holes in that.
I think so, too.
This is another one of those slideshow type of presentations where you walk through pictures of these various mainframe computers that are of historical significance, and you can read some of the verbiage. And, you know, it's not really extreme journalism, I think, when they do these things, but these slideshows are kind of fun. I don't know if you guys think so.
Journalism.
And, you know, it's fun to look at these old pictures, too. So up on Tom's Hardware, we'll have a link in the show notes. I looked through a few of these, and I didn't find any factual errors, at least in the first few that I looked at. Have either of you guys seen this?
I've got the first slide up, so it's really slow, but at least we're, like I say, we're staying on our show and stuff. But, you know, mm-hmm. Do you have any problem with the Harvard Mark I being in the list? But it's not, it wasn't, you know, I guess it was a mainframe, I guess, but it was not the truly a fully electronic computer. So, is, you know, what is a mainframe and a big computer? It was.
Well, and people pointed out that this list is kind of U.S.-centric.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Past a particular point, I guess that's fair, because the U.S. was the epicenter of mainframes after the market really started to take off. But I'm just looking through here, and I don't know. The definition of a mainframe, that's also a little problematic.
Yeah.
If it takes up a room and it's got lots of blinky lights on it, and hopefully, like, tape reels that zip back and forth.
But that one doesn't. Anisoft buried
machine. It's not a mainframe.
No, the ENIAC, yes.
Yes.
All right. It's, you know, old computers.
But all the right, ABC so is kind of small, don't you think, to be called
right.
a mainframe?
I was thinking
was
really I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. Early computer.
And they left off Colossus.
Yes. Big omission.
Come on, it's the voice of world control. How can you leave that off?
And that is definitely a mainframe. Have either of you guys seen the video where the folks responsible for rebuilding Colossus and displaying it talk about how that project all came about?
No.
Because that's a great video.
Do you have a link to that?
I'll try and find a link so I can make sure to put it in the show notes.
Cool.
I think I had started watching it at one point, and I haven't had a chance to finish it. It's pretty long. It's like 80, 90 minutes, I think.
It was a while, yeah. But it was really good information. Kind of gives you the background of how they were able to recover this information, a lot of which was really at risk of being lost due to being so heavily classified by the British government.
Are we talking about a different computer? I'm talking about Colossus from the Foreman Project.
Oh,
I don't think it was
Colossus. I was talking about
the
real Colossus. Sorry.
I'm messing
with
you.
Man.
We're gonna move it off. So basically, I have the show notes up on the screen here for our audience. So, you know, normally when we do the audio version, we'll pop in a vintage computer commercial. Normally, the host has a gift idea on this show. I didn't have a chance to pick one. Unless you guys got a quick one you know of. Do you got one you want to? Or should we move on?
I got one.
Okay, cool.
Let's see, I normally look ahead. I've got Sinclair ZX Spectrum 48K Overnight Bag. Here, I'll put a link
that sounds
in
great.
The show notes. Yeah.
One of those.
I will, here you go. There, in the show notes. You can get it from forbiddenplanet.co.uk. Very cool site, very cool shop. And they're taking pre-orders right now for the overnight bag. So it's basically just a bag, but it kind of looks like a ZX Spectrum. So
oh, look
that will
that.
Be my choice.
That is
there cool. You go, Dave. That one's for you.
Now, to get that, do I have to call it a ZX Spectrum?
Yes, you do, because that's what they're called. You have to order in metric.
The screen's loading for us here at the show. But
slowly.
Yeah, it says it's 29... 0.99 metric dollars.
Oh, overnight? I can.
Oh, no, this must be a different page, because what I'm looking at is the ZX Spectrum 48K overnight.
Yeah. Really? Because that never existed outside of America. And this is sold in the UK.
The size is in centimeters. So I have no idea how big it is. It's probably bigger than my house.
And it's so massive.
What's 41 centimeters? About a mile?
You Americans, man. I don't understand how you run the world. How did that happen?
All right, so let's see. Moving along. We're doing good. We're at, 28 after the hour? All right, back to this. So we're going to go right into the eBay auctions. So, Carrington, you can start it off with the Key Punch card printing plates.
Sure. Okay, so this is a distinctly Canadian set of items as well. There's a particular eBay seller, so I'm picking a group of items rather than a single one this time. There's in Canada, key punches were all back in the day, they were all printed by a single company, the Control Data Company. They were licensed by IBM to print official key punch cards. And they used these tiny little cylinders, and they were the printer cylinder that would print off the cards. That company then, after the cylinders would be worn down a bit, they would stick them in this little tiny room that says this was accessible only by a ladder. And then everybody sort of ignored them for a few decades. And then in the mid-90s, this fellow kind of came across them, bought the whole lot because they were about to throw them away. And he's now made them available on eBay. And I think they're kind of a cool item. So you can he's got a whole big selection of them. They're all going for about $25 or so. And you can find like a IBM key punch or setups for particular things, for insurance reports and that kind of stuff. And so these were the printer plates used in Canada to print key punch cards, so something vintage.
I like it. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Me and my wife tomorrow at one time, that was some time, she's in the audience, that was some time ago, but I remember one night we got kind of inspired looking at Selectric balls from the IBM Selectric cup cutters. And we were looking at it, and then we were just like, you know, that's kind of neat. Maybe we'll just buy one of those that were around.
Your marriage is very different than mine.
That was
thinking about a Selectric ball.
I mean, I don't know how we ended up looking at that. It was just a spur of the moment thing, but you know, it was a similar sort of idea. We just mm-hmm. were kind of fascinated with it.
I just think they make it really cool collectible. Yeah.
These print cylinders are awesome, Carrington.
Yep. I never really thought about how punch cards got printed before. I sort of assumed they came off a normal size plate or something and got cut down. I never really thought about it. So it was just sort of neat to see a view of how these were actually produced back in the 60s.
I bet you could ink one of these up, roll it across a page, and actually come up with a decent image of what a punch card looked like.
Or I was thinking instead you put them inside a little music box, and you could hear what a punch card sounds like.
You could. You could hear the Hollerith codes. That would be awesome.
See, you'd learn to recognize them by sound. Because a lot of people can say, oh, I could read punch cards by feel. Yeah, but can you tell what they say by sound?
Exactly.
That's truly hardcore.
James in the audience was asking, do you think those things are like solid on one end where you could like drink out of it?
Oh.
Do you know?
Good question. I think they're
punch
not.
Punch card shot glass.
That would be awesome, though.
Very neat. I like those.
Yeah.
Right, since I'm hosting, Earl, we'll go to you for your eBay pick.
Okay.
And I'll go last.
GotchaPro. One of the things that I've noticed, games on eBay and with retro collectors get an awful lot of attention, and rightfully so, because people are reminiscent about the fun times. But the business type of software doesn't get as much press, I think. And for a lot of people, day in and day out, this was their life. I mean, they'd go to work and they'd use WordPerfect or Lotus 123. You know, or something like that. And so I remember when Quattro Pro came out, it was quite the, stir in the industry that here's a 1-2-3 compatible spreadsheet. It's cheap. It's got a lot of functionality. And of course, since it's from Borland, it had that sensible license agreement that I've talked about before. Mm-hmm. And I used it a lot. I would love to have something like this. And I looked at the price and I thought $450 for a buy it now doesn't seem bad at all, along with $565 shipping. So for $10, you could have a few DOS spreadsheet memories here. And this came with the user's guide. You know, you look down all the stuff that it came with. They even have the keyboard templates.
Yeah, that's neat. I was just talking to someone in my booth earlier, which I haven't been in my booth a lot today, but no kidding, a little earlier today, and they were talking about the exact same thing, Earl, about just being more nostalgic and kind of appreciating old application software versus games, you know, as well as games. So that's kind of neat that you brought that up. And I know that you're doing your new podcast, you're going to do it on DBase 3+. Right,
the first episode that's coming out here in probably like a couple days is on DBase 3+.
And what's the name of that podcast?
Next Without 4.
There you go.
Sorry, shameless plug, nextwithout4.org, and the other one's chickenlipsradio.org.
And we have a question. Alan, one of our members, what?
We have a Clipper Christmas special.
Yeah, he wants you to have a Clipper Christmas special.
See, I would love to get my hands on Clipper, specifically Summer 87, but one of the only ones that I found on eBay, the guy was trying to sell it for $1,500, which was definitely a drug-induced coma. I have no idea what was going on there. So,
you didn't buy it now?
But if I ever find a Clipper at a reasonable price, I would definitely jump on that.
I was just trying to look up Quattro Pro. Like that one was from 89. I guess that was version 1 from 89, right? So that's when
it
came out?
That's what this is showing, yes.
Because what was its like sister suites? Like there was they also made Borland made like a word processing, ultimately made like an office, didn't they?
Did Borland ever make like a full office? I mean, for database, they had Paradox.
Right.
Okay.
I remember that. Borland office suite, though.
I don't remember that. Okay.
Maybe they didn't.
Pulling out
of course, the whole line of programming tools, Turbo C, Turbo Pascal, Turbo C++.
I guess there was Borland office. No, you're right. There was. I just don't think anybody used it.
Huh. Microsoft dominated, you know, so much still.
What was used then for the word processor? I mean, I thought at some point, wasn't there some deal between Borland and WordPerfect? I can't remember what it was all about.
There was something, I think. But, all right, we'll move along.
Anyway.
And even though I chose this, Kevin, before we had you as a guest host, why don't you talk about this one?
I need that now. Buy it now. Okay. So
my eBay item.
So your eBay item is a vintage faceplate from an IBM 360/50.
Yeah, that's
pretty cool.
And it's in the picture here. It's just mounted on someone's wall because why wouldn't you do that? It's art. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
They know the serial number of this thing, and if our computer...
And it's got like six days left.
Got 6 days left. So don't even bother because I'm...
There's two bids already, I think.
And I'll scroll down a little bit more.
There might be more pictures. Your computer's slow, David.
Yeah. I guess it's about all...
That's all there is to say about
it. So let's discuss, like, what do you think about that price? It's got almost a week left, and it said $1,200.
Okay, yeah, it's got a week left, it's got $1,200. So clearly these bidders do not...
Two bids. It must have opened...
It must have opened high.
We have that up.
Oh, that's right. When I first set up and I chose this, a guy was in here talking from the last talk. He's not in here. And he said, what did he say tomorrow? That he has one in his basement.
Wow.
Well, so, maybe I can buy his for less than $1,200.
I mean, the IBM 360 was a very significant, I guess, is it a mini computer? Mini computer or mainframe?
Depends how far away you stand.
Yeah. I think that's another one that straddles the line. But that.
I mean, I agree. I think it's a unique
straddle.
It's a unique art, but I would like to have it on my wall. I don't have upwards of $1,200 for it, but... What do you guys think?
I think we should.
How much will it go for?
Yeah. Well, what's it going to go for? That's a good question.
Wow, that's hard to say.
It's going to go for at least $1,200, right? It depends how much those two guys want.
Very safely put.
It only takes one jerk to make it go for $5,000. I mean, well, actually, two.
Doesn't it take two jerks?
Yeah. Get corrected.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to predict it doesn't go much higher. But you're on your own. Check it out. Because we don't usually look at final eBay auctions.
No, but we should do that with your last week's pick, David.
Yeah,
I think it's
worth making an exception on this week. Thank you, Kieran. He actually added it to the show notes, and I appreciate that. Because we did want to revisit this one. Because this is really, this is pretty unique. And I'm going to reference James again in the audience. Because I know you're familiar with seeing a number of Apple items come up new in the box and so on. And, so let's see what this one's did. This is an original Altair. Was it considered original unassembled? So not new necessarily. Well, but new. But look at that. It's up to $3,651 with 15 hours left. But look at the thing and the box and everything. It's like we talked about it last show. But obviously somebody packed this up, bought it, and then it was kept inside. You know, and right, it wasn't in the garage or attic.
Oh, right. And I would so love to know the provenance of this machine. How in the world? I mean, this has got to be the last one of these in the world that is unassembled. I can't imagine that somebody else is sitting
sure
out there with one of these.
I mean, it may be. It may be, Earl. But so when I was at the Paul Allen's Computer Museum in Seattle before it opened, they gave me a tour. and they showed me another one of these Altairs, and he had, the system administrator guy had shown me, when they had it, the guy had tried to build it, and there was one wire run from, you know, point A to point B, and then rather than being a nice, you know, wrap around the edge, whatever, it was a direct line from point A to point B. Like, if they did more wires, it was going to be a crazy mishmash of, the guy, whoever this was, did not know what they were doing, and it apparently gave up after one solder. So,
wow.
I think, although they may not exist now anymore, and of course they don't exist in mass numbers, that was probably a very common problem. Like, I'm going to build a computer, and then, shit, I don't know how to build a computer.
Yeah, Kevin, that's a really good point. That's how I got my first computer. I think I mentioned it last show. I had one of these kits, and it was handed to me by a neighbor who had tried to assemble it and gave up and said, oh, this is ridiculous. And I just got it, and I was able to, you know, undo some things he had done and then finish it, and that's how I got my first one.
So his first computer was an Altair, if you missed that. So that's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but probably most of these, you know, yes, I agree, it's probably pretty rare that, for one, there's apparently someone didn't even start, though. They just, maybe they're going to start it one day. I'd like to point out, though, where I always love it when they say, for the serious collector only. So what about the unserious collector that has a load of cash?
What about the person who's just capricious? They can't buy it?
Yo, are you a serious collector? I got $5,000.
Does that make me serious? I mean, seriously.
You're a man of good taste.
I said, $5,000? Are you serious?
All right. Oh, no. Is that the show?
You said 45 minutes. Another?
Huh?
You said 45 minutes. It's been 40 minutes.
We did it, didn't we? How about we'll attempt to do maybe a couple of questions from the... Oh, check the discussion, the chat thing real quick, Carrington. And then maybe
Rob O'Hara has decided that he is going to do his own VCF in Oklahoma. He's going to call it VCF Middle, and it's going to take place in his garage. So, and I'm going to go, man, because that sounds awesome.
Shouldn't it be VCF Oklahoma?
VCF Oak.
Hey, there's one more day. Anybody can still come. We're open tomorrow.
All right.
You can get here.
See you guys in a minute.
Oh, Earl. Does anyone have a question they'd like to ask? That's it.
Other than just why?
Huh? Oh, yeah. We're sitting at a square table here on the little platform.
It's what you had available.
We hoped you wouldn't notice. You know, you had to go and call it out to everyone.
We don't have any nights either.
Yeah, see? No one ever complains about that. All right. So I guess we'll wrap it up then. Hey, good show, though. Special, come on. Let's give it like that live presence. All right.
Milk the audience there, David.
Golf clap.
All right. So that's the show, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us, especially on this special time and place. Our next show is going to be, are we doing it? Oh, 1 week from today. How about that? We are gung-ho. So we're going to do it on, 1 week and a day, on Sunday, April 28th at our normal time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. You'll find links to the live broadcast at rcrpodcast.com, where you also find links to the forum as well as all the show notes. We're at RCR Podcast on Twitter. You can send us feedback at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. Please say something about us on iTunes and tell a friend. And until next time, everybody, retro
compute!
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now. And my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know.
It still looks like Kevin is operating David as a puppet.